Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. Hi, it's the Capital Connection. I'm David Gustina. Here with us this week, Jimmy Vielkind. Now, some will say Vielkind, but Jimmy's mother says Vielkind. He is the public media reporter at WNYC and the Gothamist. We're so glad you are in the public media fold now, Jimmy. Welcome to the Capital Connection.
Happy to be here, David.
Let's start with a sort of general overview. We've got a budget. It went past the April 1st deadline. Reporters like to make a big deal of that.
Wait.
Yeah, it's late, but what is keeping it late, Jimmy?
You know, I'm thinking about this budget in kind of six real big chunks. They're of course, $252 billion and probably 252 million fights or issues or things that are important to different people. But I think there are really six big ones. Should we go through them one by one?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, we'll start with number one, which is federal risk. So it's a $252 billion budget, and about $93 billion of that, that's roughly 30%, is money that's going to come from the federal government. Now, New York is controlled right now by an all-Democratic government. Coming out of the Biden administration, there's a whole lot of federal money that started to flow, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. And right now, Democrats in Albany are planning their budget as though that federal funding is going to stay roughly constant. Now, if anyone knows what's going on in Washington, that might not be the best assumption. Republicans led by President Donald Trump have signaled that they want to cut federal spending, and a lot of that federal spending flows through states. So there's a very, very big risk that things like the Medicaid program, which is funded jointly by the state and federal government, will be significantly cut in the coming months when Washington lawmakers put together their own federal budget. So that's a really big risk. And there's some debate as to whether or not New York should have set itself up to prepare for that, or whether it should just kind of hope for the best and plan for the best, which seems to be what they're doing now.
That's just one. Medicaid. That's just one area we're talking about being impacted. What about the MTA? Now, we saw the president of the United States, Donald Trump, go after the congestion pricing plan. They want to stop that. That's $9 below 60th Street. And a lot of that in the language was about paying off this MTA bill. But if you knock out this money, now that's a larger bill. So the MTA needs money to survive.
The MTA needs money. And that's number two of my six chunks of the budget is how much money they're going to give to the MTA and what they're going to give. And actually, it's even more complicated because congestion pricing, well, let me take a step back. The MTA has to run, the trains have to run, maybe on time, maybe not on time, but the trains have to run and they have an operating budget for that. Then they're always thinking about how can they improve the system? When do they need to buy new train cars? When do they need to replace the electronics for the signals, et cetera? And they plan that work in five-year chunks. A five-year capital plan is the technical term. And so congestion pricing was to support a chunk of the five-year capital plan that's ending.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now they're talking about a new capital plan of more than $60 billion, and they're looking for ways to fund it. So state lawmakers are expected to come up with couple billion dollars to pay for it. And there's some talk that they'll raise payroll taxes in New York City and perhaps also in the surrounding region that's served by the MTA, that being Long Island and the lower Hudson Valley. So this is still up in the air. No one seems to really want to lead on it. We've heard Governor Hochul talk about raising the payroll tax. We've heard some other a little bit more unorthodox ideas coming out of the state legislature. One that I think is interesting is our package delivery fee. So if you order something in the five boroughs on Amazon, say, then there's a fee on that package delivery that would then go to fund mass transit. So That is sort of budget fight number two, money for the MTA. And as you said, David, if the feds reduce their funding, it's only going to make it harder.
Not only that, but I heard Governor Hochul this week talking on MSNBC about Liberation Day and the president announcing tariffs on all these countries and goods. And she talked about the rebate checks she wants to give New Yorkers up to $5,000, and basically said with the way the tariffs now are going, it's going to erase any kind of gain because it's basically a giant tax on New Yorkers for whatever they're going to shop for.
Well, that's right. And that kind of gets into budget bucket number one, the federal risk. So in addition to being reliant on federal aid, New York's budget is reliant on really wealthy people. The biggest source of state revenue in New York is the personal income tax. And the people who pay the personal income tax or the lion's share of it are not public radio superstars like you and me, David. We don't get into that millionaire's tax bracket. It's really major financial industry players in Wall Street. And so as these tariffs have been rolled out by President Trump, we've seen stock market indices crash. We've seen increase in volatility. We've seen predictions of a recession this year rise from some of the leading economic forecasters. All of that is going to trickle down into perhaps lower tax receipts for New York State. So that's sort of another budget problem that's looming on the horizon for Governor Hochul and the state legislature. Of course, as we're taping this, the tariffs are still in their very, very early phases of being rolled out, but it's definitely a big risk factor. And as the governor said, she was hoping to spend about $3 billion on rebate checks, mostly targeted to middle-income New Yorkers. And if there isn't the money to pay for that, there won't be checks for New Yorkers. She's sort of laying out the stakes quite clearly as to what is on the chopping block here. And, you know, it's going to remain to be seen that if lawmakers need to come back and adjust the budget because of economic conditions or because of a loss of federal aid, these are kind of the first things that are likely to go.
We're speaking with Jimmy Vielkind, public media reporter at WNYC and The Gothamist. He's done so much more, of course, Politico and other publications leading up to where he is now. And, you know, it seems to me almost a no-brainer that they're going to end up coming back for a special session. You see the impact that the federal government is having. And as you said, they're banking on certain money that might not be there in the end. So can't you foresee this as almost a given that they're going to have to reevaluate as they go?
Yeah, given the current course of budget talks, it does seem almost inevitable that there will be a special session. You're already starting to hear state lawmakers talk about potential return to the Capitol. But just given the big risks that face the current financial plan and the current budget, from the possible reductions in federal funding to possible deterioration of economic conditions, this seems to me, based on more than 15 years of covering the New York State budget process, like a year in which there will likely have to be a return.
Well, they are trying to get some things done in this budget. One of the things that seems like has most agreement is cell phones in schools, and that's the banning of either bell to bell or some combination of an agreement to allow students to use them at lunch, or I don't know what other plans they have, but cell phones being removed from students' hands.
That's right. This is, of course, of major interest to our teenage listeners, both of them, that the cell phone restrictions do seem to be moving in a place where lawmakers are talking about adopting Governor Hochul's bell-to-bell proposal. You know that here in New York's Capital Region, there are several districts that have already adopted bell-to-bell cell phone bans for students in the classroom. To my knowledge, the world has not ended in those districts. But there was some pushback from school district groups asking for some autonomy among districts to set and develop their own policies. But one of the big potent political players in Albany, the teachers union, is really backing up Governor Hochul on this bell-to-bell push. And from what we hear from state lawmakers, it sounds like that is going to win the day.
And we are witnessing, once again, back to that federal level, the dismantling of the education department. We're seeing that ripple effect now. I've been reading stories about some major school districts in our listening area losing millions of dollars as a result of that. So now you add one more thing in is the funding of schools. And where are we going to see that hurting New York students?
Yeah, we said $252 billion, 252 probably million storylines, and that's certainly one of them. One of the proposals that hasn't received so much attention in Governor Hochul's executive budget was a desire to have the state pay for a universal free school lunch and school breakfast. And one of the reasons it hasn't received a lot of attention is because everyone heard it and said, great, let's do it. And on the scale of state programs, it's not particularly expensive. I think it was a little over $100 million a year. And again, if you're looking at a $252 billion budget, that's not a crazy amount of money to invest. But school lunches are aided by the federal government. And so a loss of federal aid would make some kind of service expansion like that all the more difficult.
And you can imagine what that means for a poor family, let's say in New York City, who can't feed their children adequately. So now if that goes away from the school lunch program, we're already hearing the pantries are suffering now. So where you would get free food from, they're going to be cutting. So we really can foresee, if this continues, some major problems with young people and nutrition.
Yes, certainly that's one of the risks. And certainly we've heard from people in school districts, as well as others who deal with hunger in America, that often a school meal is, for some students, the only meal that they'll get during the day. So certainly it is a program that has a lot of importance to a lot of people.
Now, there is something called the Rainy Day Fund in New York, and at some point it had around $20 billion in it. I don't know exactly what's in it right now. The comptroller always warns that it has to be an emergency if you're going to use it. Seems to me we're looking at emergencies.
You know, there is a reserve fund, and over the past several years, when the economy was doing well, when federal aid was flowing, Governor Hochul and Democratic lawmakers put away money for a rainy day. They stocked up on their reserve funds. There has been some talk of dipping into them, but the problem with that is if you have a long-term budget imbalance, if you have federal aid that for perhaps at least the duration of the current presidential administration is going to be flowing at a lower level, then dipping into the fund to plug a gap in 1 year is only going to get you so far. So the argument that you hear from more fiscally cautious people is that perhaps you shouldn't dip into a rainy day fund when it's not just a passing shower, but perhaps a whole season of monsoon.
We're speaking with Jimmy Vielkind, public media reporter at WNYC and The Gothamist, one heck of a journalist. Well, Jimmy, let's turn to something that has bogged down negotiations and caused a lot of fights between Republicans and Democrats in New York, and that's criminal justice issues. Of course, this is a stereotypical fight where the Republicans always say the Democrats are weak when it comes to crime and protecting New Yorkers, and the Democrats counter with, you don't give people a fair criminal justice climate when it comes to bail reform and police brutality and other problems that happen as a result of law enforcement that they talk about. But what has been particularly onerous these last few years is when we talk about discovery, the evidence that police must provide in a timely fashion to a defendant and defendant's lawyers. And it looks like there's now some negotiating room, wiggle room, at least when it comes to the governor, on the issue of discovery.
That's right. This has been one of, to get back to our six big chunks of the budget, this is probably number three. And from what we've heard from top state lawmakers, this is one of the issues that they were trying to resolve first before they even talked about the dollars and cents of this budget. So you're absolutely right in that discovery. And this is something that's maybe perhaps a little difficult for listeners to understand. This refers to an exchange of materials and evidence after somebody is arrested, but before that person's criminal trial can get started. Now, Governor Hochul has said that she wants to essentially lessen and relax the standard for what needs to be turned over. She has adopted the position of prosecutors and district attorneys in the state who say that it's difficult for them to turn over all of this material, what they consider an exhaustive amount of material, in a very timely way. And they have warned that this is leading for criminal cases to be dismissed. In Queens County, one of the five boroughs of New York City, District Attorney Melinda Katz recently said that in 2024, 27% of the cases in her office were dismissed before trial. That's 11,000 cases that were dismissed before trial. Mm-hmm. And what Hochul has proposed is changing the standard of what needs to be turned over to material that's related to a case, to things that are relevant to a case. And so that's really a key change that prosecutors say will give them the leeway to prevent dismissals on what they say are technicalities. Of course, though, there's always a counterargument. And defense attorneys, as well as many of the lawmakers who voted for the changes to the discovery law in 2019, say that this would tip the balance too much in favor of prosecutors, that they would have too much discretion about what materials should be shared and what materials could be held back if this change were adopted. There is some talk about looking at whether an error was made in good faith or not as a grounds for dismissal. That's some of the potential compromises we've heard floating around. There's some talk about maybe adding more money for compliance. There is some talk about changing exactly what is required in a prescribed category. But as of yet, this is one of the major fights of the budget, and it is still, to my knowledge, unresolved.
And I assume the more money for compliance means hiring more staff to get that evidentiary information out more quickly?
Indeed.
Well, from discovery, let's talk about something that might even be more controversial, which is involuntary commitment. Mm-hmm. We've seen tragic situations on the subway. We'll use that as an example. In one case, actually an illegal immigrant set a woman on fire and people being pushed in front of trains. The idea that there may be people with mental health problems or others that need to be removed from the streets.
Yeah, so this is another one where Governor Hochul, in the name of increasing public safety, wants to broaden the standard for the type of person who could be involuntarily committed to mental health treatment at a hospital. Right now, police can take someone for treatment if they are behaving in a way where they exhibit sort of an imminent danger to either themselves or others. So that's someone threatening self-harm or suicide. Or it's someone saying, I'm going to hit, I'm going to shoot, I'm going to get you all, et cetera, et cetera. Governor Hochul wants a broader standard where if someone is maybe not speaking about violence or threatening violence, but evincing that they can't care for themselves, someone who's refusing shelter, someone who's refusing food, who's not adequately clothed for the weather. And this has been an interesting issue in that it's sort of split. It doesn't fall and split neatly along political lines. On the one hand, you have lawmakers who feel those public safety concerns. On the other, you have more liberal lawmakers who say this is a question of individual rights and perhaps an unwarranted expansion of state power. This would make it easier for someone to be brought for mental health treatment. Mm. So generally, that means you're going to go to a hospital and you can be held in the hospital basically for 14 days. If medical professionals agree with that. The question then becomes, what happens after those 14 days? And there really isn't a good answer because long-term supportive housing, which is what advocates say many of the individuals who perhaps have these mental illnesses are required to live stable, productive lives, is just not available in large numbers. So one of the criticisms of the governor's proposal is that it's a Band-Aid on a much larger wound, and that while it may sound good and it may allow a politician to say that they've done something to tackle the problem, it's not going to have a major impact.
You know, it's not on our list, but what are they doing in the budget this time around to help with housing?
This has not been a major focus in these budget talks. Last year, the governor pushed for changes that would provide incentives for localities and communities that change their zoning laws to allow for more easy housing development. This budget does include funding to support a deal reached in New York City called the City of Yes, in which the city upzoned certain neighborhoods to allow for the production of more housing. That funding has not been particularly controversial, and my assumption is that it will probably go through.
From there, let's talk about masks in public. One of the unintended consequences of the COVID pandemic, it seems. People using those masks for nefarious purposes, and the governor wants to stop that.
It's not quite a ban. It's much more of a partial ban or some restrictions. So the law as it currently stands allows people to wear masks for essentially any reason that they wish, which is a 180 from New York's law before the pandemic. There was actually an anti-mask law on the books in the state of New York from the early 19th century.
Huh.
It dates to rent protests, and the legislature wanted to prevent people from doing this anonymously. Of course, during the COVID-19 pandemic, they didn't want to have that conflict when everyone was encouraged and mandated to wear masks in public to prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. And now, as you said, it's become a much stickier wicket, especially when you consider that there are people who are not committing crimes, but engaging in protests on hot button issues like Israel's war in Gaza, in which they want to be anonymous because they fear either retaliation for the principles they're expressing, or they fear being doxxed and sort of outed. So lawmakers have really struggled to find a law that would allow for peaceful protest, that would allow for police to crack down on people who are harassing or assaulting others and hiding behind a cloak of anonymity, while also carving out exceptions for medical uses as well as religious uses. And, you know, we'll call Halloween a religious holiday. It is All Hallows Eve.
Indeed.
I don't know if this is going to make it in the budget. There has been significant pushback from lawmakers within the governor's own Democratic Party, because, again, it just seems a very, very difficult line to tread.
Jimmy, let's talk a little politics for a minute, because we have something brewing down in New York City. We all know there's a mayoral race. We all know that, at least if you're paying attention, that the former disgraced governor, Andrew Cuomo, the former governor, Andrew Cuomo.
I forgot about that guy.
Remember that guy?
Yeah.
He's getting in the race, and his poll numbers show he leads. Now, let's talk about the current mayor, Eric Adams, whose case before a judge was dismissed. He's free now to run, and he says, I'm not running in a Democratic primary. I'm going to run as an independent, and I'm going to come out and try to keep my office. You got a number of other ancillary candidates in the race as well. All sorts of issues we've been talking about surrounding New York City. And into this fray comes a man who just got out of trouble and a man who's seeking to reclaim a position, maybe to reform himself.
Yeah, it's shaping up to be an incredibly, incredibly interesting race. And it sounds like the timeline for it being an interesting race is going to continue. Now, Adams' case was dismissed formally on Wednesday. And on Thursday, he announced that he would run as an independent. And partly that's a bow to time pressure. So the Democratic primary is scheduled for the third week in June. And candidates, in order to participate in that primary, had to submit petitions to get on the ballot by Thursday night. For all indications, Eric Adams hasn't been doing that. He hasn't really been campaigning as his legal case has loomed over his head. But by running as an independent, he has more time to create his own party and to get on the ballot that way. Now, of course, New York is a deep blue Democratic city, so running as a third party candidate is going to pose some troubles. There was someone who did it recently successfully, Mike Bloomberg, but he had the greatest superpower of all: money, money, and lots more money. So it's unclear the extent to which Adams will be successful. He does retain some base of support. He can say that he was treated unfairly by prosecutors. In fact, he already started saying that when his charges were dismissed. And I do think that argument will resonate with some people. But a deeper stain than these charges, as my colleague at WNYC, Elizabeth Kim, has pointed out, is the way in which he has positioned himself vis-a-vis the Trump administration. In the court order dismissing the case against Adams, federal judge Dale Ho wrote that the whole arrangement smacked of a bargain in which Adams would be cleared from criminal prosecution if he assisted the Trump administration's crackdown on illegal immigration within the five boroughs. The idea of a mayor who has made a bargain with Donald Trump is something that is going to be deeply unpopular with New Yorkers, particularly in the majority of Democrats who are the largest voting bloc in that city.
Jimmy Vielkind, public media reporter for WNYC and The Gothamist. Let's talk about the situation in New York's prisons. It started with the brutal beating death of a man named Robert Brooks, and this was up in central New York. That commenced Governor Hochul taking a deep look, firing some of the people involved. And shortly after this goes down, all of a sudden there's a strike among the corrections officers. That takes over the headlines. Even though we've seen a couple of other cases coming out of the prison system of abuse and one death, at least that I know of, you have this idea that now the prisons aren't staffed enough. They go on an unauthorized strike. The governor says, get back to work by this time or you're fired. They are then subsequently let go. But then she kind of backs away from a lifetime of being fired, goes away from that. And now you have this story that because staffing is so low at many of these prisons, the way to solve the overcrowding is to let prisoners out early.
Yeah, it's a mess. There's no other way to describe it than it's a mess. For a very long time, correctional officers have said that conditions in prisons were deteriorating. They have said that as a result of a lack of staff, violence against inmates and violence by inmates against correctional officers and violence among incarcerated people have been on the rise. Statistics do back that up. And as a result, it's been hard for the state to hire correctional officers. Looking in the wake of this strike, I think it's going to be even harder for the state to hire correctional officers. And it seems like one of the clearest ways out of this situation is to increase staff. The state wants to increase staff. The state has special programs to increase staff. The state is changing the requirements or proposing to change the requirements to hire correctional officers. I believe they're reducing the age at which someone can be hired into that job in order to get people into these facilities. It's not clear to me that any of this is going to work. It's not clear that any of it is a good solution. And in that swamp of problem, we're now hearing about the early release of some eligible incarcerated people back into their communities. Certainly, that will be a situation which will be heavily politicized and potentially have major impacts in communities across the state. Going into an election year in 2026 for Governor Hochul, my suspicion is that we'll be hearing a lot about this decision, as well as her actions during and leading up to the strike, particularly in upstate New York, where we have prisons located in the North Country, in central New York, and right here in the Capital Region.
Fortunately, we are out of time. Our guest has been Jimmy Vielkind, public media reporter at WNYC and The Gothamist. Jimmy, thanks so much for being with us on the Capital Connection this week.
Thanks for having me, David. It's always a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.